In this time together, we're going to be exploring jasmine in relationship to trust. Some of you that know me, that have taken different courses from me over time, know that I'm a very transparent teacher, meaning I don't believe in playing a role of a teacher in the sense that it means much more to me that anyone that is taking any kind of study with me actually has an empowered experience of learning. That's much more meaningful to me than anyone perceiving me as an expert in something. With that said, I take my soul's calling and the position that I find myself in of being a teacher and a facilitator very seriously, and I study a lot. I am in a continual contemplation with the nature of life, the nature of the human soul, the evolution of human consciousness and of consciousness in general. And I take very special care to not talk beyond my own experience. And I say all of this because, as a preface to doing this work together, exploring jasmine and trust, I have experienced an overwhelming kind of really a form of resistance, but that's come up and sounds something like, "Tiffany, you can't do this. You can't do this lesson on jasmine and trust. You're having all sorts of trouble with that right now. How are you going to possibly transmit that? And, you know, you better hold off until you kind of have your shit more together." Pardon my language. Or sometimes it manifests as a voice that doesn't feel so much like a voice. It's more of a quality of distraction, which can sometimes manifest as tiredness or nervousness or just literally being distracted in things. And yet, as I'm here with you right now and having sat in a meditation before this and having taken my place to myself to a quiet place for this week to rest and reflect and to very much be with jasmine and be with you all, I suppose it only makes sense that this would be coming up in the way that it is. Because as I've shared with you all many times, when we're doing this kind of work, there's really nothing that's outside of the divine opportunity for learning and for growth, for understanding, for depth of integration. Trust is a topic that is quite fantastically large, actually. And I think that it's easy to have a sort of two-dimensional relationship to the concept of it. What I mean by that is it's easy to hear the word trust and say, "Oh yes, trust, I know what that means, trust." We might think about who we trust and who we don't trust. We might think about the experience that we have of feeling like we trust a decision that we've made, or the experience of that awful feeling where the ground is shifting underneath you in a quality of doubt of doubting, which I really feel is the opposite of trust, when we fundamentally doubt, say, a decision that we made. I'm going to start with looking at trust from a very big perspective in relationship to some of the stories within the collective, some of our creation stories. So when we look back, say, upon the Christian story of creation, we see that trust and a betrayal of trust was really sort of the epicenter, or the, in a way we could say, the central plot of the creation story itself. So there was God, and God created the earth and all of the beauty of the earth, and then God created man. And then, as the story goes, from one of man's ribs and the earth, God created woman, and they lived in great peace. And the way that it's described, I always feel like that they must have been experiencing a kind of non-dual bliss, the kind of bliss that we experience when all existential anxiety and all sense of separateness is completely absent from our experience, and we experience a kind of divine unity with all that is. So this was the state that Adam and Eve were existing within. Everything was provided for, and there was a kind of complete completion of unity, of the complete absence of lack of any form. And then there was the grand seduction, really, of what's said is the serpent seducing Eve into taking of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. And then Eve has, I guess we could say it's the secondary seduction. Eve has Adam eat of the tree, of the fruit of the tree of knowledge. And then God finds out, or God knows instantaneously, and casts Adam and Eve out of the Garden of Eden. And from then and from there, they are to have suffering. And if you think about the story, let me also add, they're to have suffering and to have to, you know, struggle to provide for themselves, procure food, have clothing, find shelter, all of these things. So there's actually many other creation stories in different cultures. It's quite a beautiful study to look at creation stories throughout cultures. But the ones that I have looked at, even though they all vary, some have similarities and many have large variances, but in every one that I have ever read, there's some kind of fall from grace and some kind of a betrayal that happens. So in the Adam and Eve story, Eve betrays Adam, Adam and Eve betray God, and then they are cast out to have to fend for themselves. So we see this connection between the kind of trust, first of all, that is inherent and is non-relative. So that kind of trust is what we could say energetically is present in a newborn child. A newborn child isn't trying to trust that it will be cared for. There is an inherent quality and literal existence of implicit trust. It's a little bit of a mind bender, because that doesn't mean that we all know that there are infants that are not cared for, despite the existence of this inherent quality of trust. So we have to just parse those apart. So there's this primacy of trust that you could say we're all actually born with. That is an inherent part of the truth of non-duality, of the truth of non-separateness. Then as we grow and we differentiate and we see ourselves as separate from another, I'm Tiffany, you're you, your dog or your pet is your dog or your pet, and so on it goes. When we have the reality of separation and of, as one of my teachers says, the things in space paradigm, that we're all things in space moving around, when we become aware of that reality, that co-created reality, this then opens up the, what's that expression? Opens up Pandora's box. It opens us up to the whole dynamic of relative trust. And within the dynamic of relative trust, there is an interplay of all kinds of psychological happenings and sensations and maneuvering in regards to whether or not it's safe to trust. And we start imprinting around all of that, of course, when we're very young, gauging what is safe, what is not safe, who is trustworthy, who is not trustworthy, what places are safe or trustworthy, and what places are not safe and not trustworthy. And actually, we have a very highly developed, we could say mechanism or mechanisms within the developing ego that operate, and within the developing personalities that operate, in order to continually judge, to detect and pick up stimuli and cues, and then feed that back to our past reference points in order to determine if it's safe to proceed. It's actually quite extraordinary what that aspect of our own ego does for us to keep us safe. Now, where things can get quite complicated actually is because we start having twistings in regards to trust at quite a young age. And these actually end up being sort of distortions and cross wirings in regards to the concept of trust. And let's look at those for a moment. So say, for example, I'm going to use myself for example. I oftentimes use my own personal experience in examples, not because I don't have many, many cases, clinical cases that I could use for examples, but simply because I know that when I use a personal example that Spirit has guided me into deep connection with and perspective with, that I'm able to transmit the essence and energy of that in probably the most powerful way, because it's part of my own lived life experience. The same is true with you. So when we have an experience within our life and we're able to fully, or we're on the path to fully digesting that experience and integrating it within our body, our mind, our heart, and our higher self, and then we're able to tell that story and share that story from our own heart, there's so much that can be transmitted. There's so much medicine in our own personal story that goes way beyond the personal sphere. I'm very much a believer in story as medicine. So in my own timeline, I was sexually violated, sexually abused by my grandfather when I was quite young. And I had these sort of ghostly kind of feelings. They were even not quite feelings, that had happened, that started in my 20s. Interestingly, by seeing something like that happen on a movie, and it was like it opened up a closet in a great mansion within that I didn't even know existed. You know, and there was a sort of a spooky nature to it because I couldn't grasp what it was that was emerging from that closet. And I remember I talked to a student counselor at that time because I was in college. And she said, well, this may or may not have happened to you because I didn't have any concrete memory. But is it doing you any good to harp on it right now? And I thought about it and I thought, no, it's not. And I think she recommended something like, well, perhaps you just let it go for now and then trust the process of emergence if it's meant to emerge at some point. And so that's what I did. And then it took another decade, a little over a decade, for it to emerge again in a more substantial way, but still with a ghostly kind of quality, more substantial ghostly quality, if we could say that. And then I had quite a profound, really a shamanic type of experience that wasn't induced by any hallucinogens or drugs. But long story short, I became aware in that experience of these different places and spaces within my body and my mind that had what I came to call cross-wiring in relationship to trust because of those experiences with my grandfather when I was young, and that were then reinforced over many experiences within my life, which is often the case. And it actually wasn't until some years after that I had an actual full flashback of some of the things that had happened. But what I'd like to do is go to actually this concept of the cross-wiring and what happens there within our body and mind when we experience some kind of a betrayal of trust. So in my case, I was quite young. I was 4 and 5. And my grandfather was someone that I cared tremendously for. You know, it's an interesting thing because oftentimes these cycles of abuse are perpetuated through family lineages and through communities. And the person that's acting out is acting out of their pain and their suffering, and which is not the same thing as making that okay, but it's acknowledging the bigger picture in the unfolding of what happens within lineages, within time or over time. And it would have been, I think, much easier for me to kind of take all of this in, so to speak, had my grandpa been a vile, you know, evil character, diabolical character. But because he was also somebody that I cared tremendously for and who displayed genuine care for me, which is so odd to say, right, that one person could, on the one hand, hurt a young, innocent child so much, and also give such care. And this is part of, these types of dynamics are some of the most tenacious in regards to distortions of trust. The dynamics of abuse, physical, emotional, or sexual, particularly from someone that we trust and someone that we love, creates, again, very tenacious distortions of trust within the body and the mind. And so we're going to take a little bit of time to explore that. But I also want to say that even if in your particular historical experience in this life, you haven't experienced those things, physical, verbal, physical, emotional, mental, or sexual abuse from someone that you care about, this is still such a significant part of the collective that it's important for all of us, actually. It's important for all of us to understand. It's important for all of us to be able to emanate. Part of what it is that I feel that Jasmine's here to help us remember, which is a quality of being able to connect in and transmit the nature of trust within ourselves, and then extend that when and where it's appropriate to another. So I've been making reference to a kind of cross-wiring or distortion that can happen with trust. And let's look at that. We'll take the example that I just gave you from my life. So in this particular example, I had someone that I trusted, my grandfather, who I also loved very much. And he violated that trust and took advantage. And in so doing, there was a kind of cross-wiring that happened within me around loving and trusting someone and then being hurt by them. And then the further sort of distortion or folding around it of, how do I even say, of continuing to live with and around a person who has hurt you. And in a sense, as this often happens through family cycles of abuse, in a sense, acting as if it's okay, because it becomes part of the family energetic and literal terrain or backdrop or storyline, you could say. So again, this is a twisting between love and care and hurt and betrayal. When this happens to individuals at a younger age, or I should say, the younger the age that this happens, the more kind of gnarly and tenacious that particular distortion can be. Because it takes a while, actually, for the human ego to fully form itself and its boundaries, part of its protective nature. So in a sense, when we're young, our family, our immediate family, our caregivers are actually making up energetically and literally part of our own boundaries, our boundaries of protection, our boundaries of safety. And so when and if those primary caregivers, those guardians, are violating those boundaries, violating safety, then there's a kind of confusion and distortion that starts at a very young age. And it actually creates a kind of misunderstanding that can be literally embodied within the person around what is to be trusted and what is not to be trusted. Many, many people that experience some kind of sexual violation or abuse when they were young often spend much of their life being confused, whether consciously or unconsciously, about what and who is safe, about what and who is okay to let into your inner sanctum, into your inner sanctuary, and oftentimes will struggle with continually finding themselves in relationships with people that can't be trusted, or putting themselves in positions, continually putting themselves in positions with people that cannot be trusted, or doing things to themselves that are not trustworthy, meaning that are not honoring the preservation of one's soul and one's spirit. So I'm going to move on. I want you to sort of hold these different pieces within your mind's eye, within your heart, as we move through. The secondary piece that I want to bring in has to do with the phenomena of leaving ourselves in order to be a part of our family unit or our cultural community unit. And this brings in a little bit of the reality of abandonment, but as it's directly connected to betrayal and trust. So also starting at a young age, we often find that we will navigate away from ourself in order to make someone else happy. So this will often start with our parents or our guardians, that we we have something in our little hearts that we know feels right to us or doesn't feel right to us. But we're in positions where we lay that down, so to speak, at the feet of what's right or what's being asked of from our parents or guardians or caregivers. And so we, in a sense, energetically leave our own self, what our self knows is true or what our self wants or desires, in order to take on that desire of our guardian or our parent and shift our focus to that. This kind of conditioning, interestingly, happens a little bit differently between males and females. And I think this is starting to shift quite a bit, but it's still deeply entrained within the human collective that little boys will have certain ways that they're taught or entrained to please parents, and little girls will have ways that they're taught or entrained to please parents. And it's not just parents, it's teachers and other authority figures within their life. And so there's slightly different pathways that can be engendered within the little boys and within the little girls. And those aren't hard and fast. You know, we might see some merging and blurring of those. But if we take, for example, what we often see in the conditioning with little girls around around being cute and smiling. Not that little boys aren't meant to be cute too, but we definitely see a kind of conditioning overlay around girls being sweet and keeping the peace and being pretty. And this is reflected back in the tone of our voice, you know, when we talk with little girls versus little boys and how we might dress them up and the activities that they might be in. So we are all conditioned to please, to culturally please those in authority figures, those that we perceive as those that are authority figures in our lives. I'm not pointing this out to say that there's necessary to say it as something wrong. Rather, I'm pointing it out to illuminate what is, that we're all very, very deeply conditioned from a young age. And in this process of being conditioned to in essence, people please, sometimes placate, and even enmesh or collude. I think these are all things that we can be taught quite young, especially if you grow up in a dysfunctional or alcoholic addict family where the authority figures might be very chaotic, or the love that's, or the warmth that's extended is conditional and not necessarily predictable. Kids get really good at sort of morphing and shifting themselves in order to get the warmth and the care that they desire. So we begin to leave ourselves at a young age. And by leaving ourselves, I mean we leave the truth that's in our heart. We leave the truth that's in our heart in order to I'm going very slow because it's important. In the most severe cases, we learn to leave ourselves in order to survive, literally within the family of origin that we might have been in. And in less severe cases, we leave ourselves in order to get a reflection of something back that makes us feel very good or feel good. And so we progress through life with this habit, really, of stepping away from our own selves And does this happen to everyone? Well, conditioning happens to everyone. But this phenomena of leaving oneself for another, which, by the way, it doesn't have to just be another person. It can be it can be a religion. It can be some type of a phenomena or a happening. It doesn't have to be limited to an individual. So not everyone does this in a dramatic way. Not everyone learns to do this in a dramatic way, but many, many, many people do. And it's very subtle, but what happens over time is that we actually have an erosion of trust of our own self, trusting in our own self. So trusting that we will be there for ourselves when it comes down to it. When push comes to shove, if we're in a particular challenging circumstance with a person that's very near and dear to us, are we going to leave ourselves in order to stay with that person, in order to get the reflection of warmth or love back that perhaps part of our personality desires or has become addicted to? Are we going to leave ourselves and make the choice and take the action of something that's destructive to the self? Or are we going to stand by ourselves and love ourselves, every part of ourself, and take actions that are only reflective of that loving nature? All of us, of course, have some aspect of self-sabotage that can come out at different times. And actually, this experience of self-sabotaging nature coming out is an experience, is an engendered experience that can display the phenomena of a betrayal of trust of oneself to oneself, and then a subsequent harm. You know, sometimes it's a very small one and sometimes it's a very significant one. So when we have a collection of these experiences and also this energetic phenomena, sort of like an energetic highway that gets laid down as we repeat certain actions or behaviors over time. It also, by the way, creates certain neural nets, neural pathways within the brain that we automatically take when we're in certain circumstances. So this collection of, we could say, betrayals of self to self, and in a sense, violations of trust self to self, they can then become projected out onto others. And we can become hypervigilant about what can be trusted and what can't be trusted, who can be trusted and who can't be trusted. And actually it can breed and give way to a type of deep, deep cynicism about the nature of goodness in life. And even a deep cynicism about our own capacities to be a force in the world, to be the light of our own soul within the world. On the flip side, some may not experience a projecting out of this distrust, but it can turn inward, and one can experience a perpetual collapse into a very erosive and corrosive type of self-doubt. And myself, I've experienced a tremendous amount of that in my life, of this kind of ominous. I just had a visual of the headless horseman in the Sleepy Hollow, this sort of ominous force that can emerge at the most unpredictable times. that is sort of all-encompassing and all-engrossing, like being in the center of the ocean where all you can see in all directions is water and you're submerged in it, and completely losing any reference point for self, for my own center, for my own authentic nature. So the phenomena, the pathology of the phenomena can go in either direction like that. So what does all this have to do with jasmine? I started working with jasmine essential oil some time ago, quite a while ago. And from the very beginning when I was working with her, with it, I was always drawn to putting it on the wrists. The wrists themselves are like the metaphor for the connection or the bridge between our inside world and our outside world. So our ability to be able to extend ourselves out, to be able to receive a helping hand, and to be able to trust that entire process is actually, we could say, symbolized within the physical space of the wrists. And I, like I said, I was drawn to putting jasmine on the wrists, also on CV17, on over the heart. And I always experienced this kind of softening in the people that I would treat when I was using jasmine, with the hardness around their heart, that hardening that happens to all of us with each violation and each breach and each betrayal of trust. We kind of, it's like our pericardium, the sac around the heart, it takes the jab, it takes the blow, it takes the laceration, it takes the contusion so that it preserves our own heart. So here our pericardium is battered and bruised and scarred and stitched up. And if that scar tissue, if those wounds go untended to, then we end up with different energetic pathologies of the heart, which over time translate to physiological pathologies of the heart. But say, for example, we have all of this scar tissue in the pericardium, and I'm speaking metaphorically here and energetically. But all of this scar tissue goes sort of untended to, unworked with, untouched. Then it becomes hard and thick, and then the heart itself can't breathe. And we end up with much, much thick walls and layers of this scar tissue surrounding the heart, with the net result being a lack of an experience and a reality of freedom within the heart, freedom to expand, freedom to love, freedom to emanate warmth, freedom to receive warmth. We become guarded in subtle or not so subtle ways. So as I was working with jasmine over the years, I began to see that it seemed to have this way of going in the meridians, the heart meridian, the pericardium meridian, and going straight into that area around the heart, in the area of the pericardium, and softening and nurturing and whispering sweet things to the pericardium so that it could relax and let go. In my own experience, I'll share a story with you that was quite profound, that I had with jasmine, putting it on the wrists multiple times a day. I was in a situation where I was going through a divorce, a separation first and then a divorce, and there had been a betrayal of trust, and it was actually me who had betrayed the trust of my husband, and it was something that I never even imagined that I would ever do, a position that I would ever find myself in. And I felt that I couldn't bear the pain and the shame and this whole sort of hairball of God knows what else that was emerging because of this life circumstance. And I was leaving my body. I kept just dissociating and going numb. And I knew that I had to, I knew for the sake of my own soul that I had to stay present as much as possible with what was happening, that it literally, I didn't know exactly why. I wouldn't have been able to articulate it, but I knew it was imperative to the health of my soul that I stay present in my body through this process. And Jasmine came to me. I just knew beyond, it's when you know, it's the kind of knowing that's like the rock solid knowing. You don't know why you know, but you know, and it's immovable. And I knew that Jasmine needed to be with me 24/7 and that I needed to apply it to my wrists on a very regular basis. And so I literally, anywhere from probably 5 to 8 times a day, I'd put a drop of Jasmine on my wrist, put my wrist together, take a breath in, then put my wrist up to my nose and inhale a few times. And that Jasmine allowed me to stay in my body, to stay present, to, for the most part, feel what I was feeling as I was feeling it. And it allowed me to be with my own heart and not leave myself. And by not leaving myself, I was actually able to move through that time. I wouldn't call it with grace necessarily, but certainly more, relatively speaking, certainly more grace than it would have been if I had numbed out and ran away from my own self, because I had done that before in the endings of relationships and had accumulated a tremendous amount of baggage that had to be unpacked later because of that. So what is it that Jasmine is offering up to us in relationship to trust? I think that question is a really important one and a beautiful one, and one that, if it resonates with you, I invite you to take in and take on so that more will be revealed to you. And I'm really hoping that we have some beautiful revelations together in the Healing Oil Collective around this, because I feel like I have some insights for sure, and I certainly have much clinical experience around it, but I also feel like in some ways I'm sort of scratching the surface of what it is that Jasmine ultimately wants to teach us in regards to trust. I will share with you now what I believe and I see happening in regards to Jasmine and trust, and then you can take the torch from there, as they say, as will I. And we'll go deeper with it. So as I mentioned before, I have always felt that Jasmine went well on the wrists. The pericardium channel, source point for pericardium, pericardium 7 is on the center of the wrists. And heart 7 is below the pinky finger on the wrist, below the line of the wrist, on the palmar side of the hand, palmar side of the wrist. And what I feel energetically is that the Jasmine goes into those meridians and goes around the pericardium, caresses her, sings to her, or him, however you want to think about that, and provides great comfort and ease to a heart that's been battered, a heart that's been hurt. The way I've experienced this and the way that I've had people share it with me is that it's not like it goes in and erases the pain of a betrayal, but it goes in and it brings divine song and divine perspective to the nature of betrayal. And what I've found is that if there has been a betrayal, if you have been betrayed by another or you have been betrayed another, that particular kind of pain that comes from betrayal, which is so deep and so old and goes back so far in time for all of us, that it has this way of singing in song, singing in song so that we don't have to fragment ourselves away from the betrayal, but we can actually let the betrayal become an integrated part of our own being so that we can become more whole, more compassionate, and more heartful despite the betrayal. And we could even say because of the betrayal itself. As Clarissa Estes, who wrote Women Who Run With the Wolves, talks about how it's the scarred and cracked heart that's able to sort of crack open and spill out the loose violeta, the violet light that actually can be the healing light, not only for ourselves, but for the world. So it's the cracked open heart that provides the medicine, that provides the medicine itself for the wound itself. And what I feel and sense is that Jasmine allows us to make that journey of connecting in with our own broken heart, with our own hurts, and then allows us to, in the most beautiful and in a way blissful way, be with that hurt and that pain, not separate from it, so that we can actually merge, become one with it, and transmit our light in that way. You may be hearing the rain right now. It's coming down quite hard here. So that's definitely one very full aspect of how Jasmine relates to trust. Another aspect and element that I feel coming online so strongly for us now in the Healing Oil Collective has to do with, and I'll also say that I think this is why both Jasmine Grandiflorum and Jasmine Sambach wanted to be worked with together, is this ability to trust our movement within, between our own divine masculine and our own divine feminine, and heal the breaches of trust between those two, both as they exist within us and as they exist outside of us. So what I mean by that is, if, for example, you've lived a life where you grew up in a family of origin where your father really couldn't be trusted, and that was continually being reinforced perhaps by things your mother said or things that your father did, and so consequently you've grown up and overcompensated in a way where you really developed your own masculine side because you had to take care of business because there wasn't a masculine figure within your family of origin that could be dependable. So you almost over-rely or over-lean on your internal masculinity at the sacrifice of your own yielding nature, yielding and receptive nature. So Jasmine can go in and heal and mend that bridge between the divine, between the masculine and the feminine as it exists within you, so that each one can trust the other to provide and step up when they're meant to. And this same phenomena can happen from inside of you to outside of you. So, for example, if then you over-rely on your own masculine and say you're a female, and you also have the story of that the man can't be trusted or relied upon, then in your partnership, if you're in a partnership with a man or a woman, perhaps what ends up happening is that you project that out onto the person, that they're not going to get things done, that if you don't remind them that it's not going to happen, that if you falter or aren't able to go to work, or if you get ill, that they aren't going to be counted on to do what they're going to need to do to provide for you or for the family. So Jasmine can also help to soften that movement of trust in relaxation into the divine feminine or relaxation into the divine masculine, and really relaxation into the ability to move smoothly between those two. So that's where I feel Jasmine Sambach and Grandiflorum coming in really strongly to teach us all in the Healing Oil Collective. Thank you for being together with me during this time, and I look forward to hearing about your explorations and discoveries, your dreams and synchronicities and experiences with Jasmine and trust.